Okay, it is 1:11 p.m. on Saturday. It's May 22nd. You never did tell me how your sister's doing.
She's doing fine. She's doing fine.
That's good,
How
man.
are you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Just got off of work, like always, and it's my day off, so I'm gonna do some laundry. That's what I do on my day off. I'm gonna play some piano, probably. Maybe a little bit of cooking. How about you?
You're cooking crack, right? Like usual.
Well, I only do that about once a month. So, I like to batch cook my crack.
Yep. It's just for you, right? Not for the neighborhood.
I smoke a lot of crack, so yeah, crack heads work is never over.
So is it an
Like,
expensive habit?
surprisingly, no. The most expensive, well, crack. I mean, I say a crackhead's work is never over, but like, obviously, I'm a crackhead, but also a crack dealer because I deal to myself. But you got to get all the ingredients, right? And surprisingly, the most important and expensive ingredient of crack is cocaine. So I have to buy the cocaine from somebody else because I don't know how to make it myself.
Well, you're the wisest crackhead I've ever met, though. So it's like, hey, you're very intelligent. I mean, we met in a shady alley. There's a couple
We met
crackheads.
under a bridge, yeah. We met under a bridge. Everybody knows that, yeah.
I was a crackhead at that time too.
That's right.
But I kicked it. I kicked it. I
That's how we bonded.
that's what?
That's how we bonded.
Yeah, that's how we bonded. We had something. A common interest, so
Yeah, that being crack. But like, crack is one of those drugs where like, it's not like, hey man, pass the pipe. It's not like weed where like it's a communal drug. It's like, don't you touch my crack. It's like,
it's like you try to shank me a couple of times because
it
like
was a shaky start to the friendship, but
it was shaky, but
yeah,
you
ultimately it ironed out.
I'm glad you didn't shank me over the crack.
I'm glad you didn't try to steal my crack, so I didn't have
No,
to shank you.
man.
Because if you tried to steal it, dude, like I would have shanked you. But we're past all that now.
we are.
Like
I
I
gave
make my
you,
own crack and
yep. I gave you all mine because I was kicking the habit. So, like, that's how our friendship,
That's how it blossomed.
it blossomed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
I hope,
Codependency.
I hope you can. We're still trying to find a way for you to kick it. What's holding you back,
Someday.
man? What's holding you back?
It just feels so good, dude. It
Oh
feels so
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the high.
She's like you're in heaven next to
It's like kissing God. Yeah, I get a I get I'll wake up at like 2 a.m. and I'll shamble out of my apartment that I share with four other people, and I sleep on the couch, and I'll put my pajamas on and like an open shirt, and I'll go down to the gas station with like one sandal on, and I'll wait at like 2:30 a.m. until 7 a.m. for them to open. And then I'll buy like a little flower, the flower in the glass bottle, and then a chore boy. This is getting so specific that I'm afraid that the audience might think I actually do crack. But anyway, yeah, I do all that, and then it's back home, and then I can start my day.
That's very specific. I was just joking, bro. You know the whole process.
I took the joke too far,
Yeah.
like I always do.
Yeah. Well
Karma,
done. Well
karma.
done. Glad we don't actually smoke crack. Let's just
I'm
be clear.
so stoked that I am not addicted to crack, dog. I'm very, very excited about that.
I've dealt with a few at a couple of my stores, and they're not that pleasant if they haven't had it. So,
They're like real life zombies.
yeah,
And depending on like You know, they're like the Walking Dead zombies
Yep.
when they have it.
Brains. Oh my
And
God.
then like and then they're like the rage zombies from 48 Days Later when they don't have it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They're very clever though too at the same time, but they're clever in a very
Yeah, that's
messy
probably the
way.
true.
Yeah. Well, now that we got that crack
Now
den
that we got
story.
the light stuff out of the way.
The lights. Yep. So how are you actually doing, buddy?
I'm good. I haven't had any DMV beef lately. That's been smooth sailing for me. But I hear you've been cooking up the beef with the DMV. Like what's going on with that, brother? I've been hearing through the grapevine that you've been dealing with some troubles.
Yeah, my friend, actually, I rarely have beef. I rarely have beef because I'm a vegetarian. But
Yeah, and a Hindu. I know. Yeah,
yep.
being Hindu.
Yep. I'm not Hindu. No,
Oh well, I thought that was the reason you didn't have beef.
I'm agnostic. I'm not Hindu, but I don't have beef because I'm a vegetarian. But like with the DMV in particular, it's because I don't get why the DMV, the New York State DMV, is separated from the court system. It kind of reminds me of when the church was separated from the state. You know more
You
about
think that was
that.
a big mistake, huh?
No. I don't really know that much about it, but like
You
why?
think the church and state should be together, like they should be working together?
I don't think that would be be that beneficial, but I don't know that much about it. Why did that happen? Why did you tell me why the church and state separated?
Why did the church and the state separate? Fuck, man, you're just hitting me with the heavy fucking history questions right out the gate. Well, generally, I think like one founding principle of the country was that we needed ch separation from church and state because many of our ancestors came here to escape religious persecution, and there were like standardized in other countries. There were like official country religions, so we were like. We wanted it to be one of our founding principles to have no official religion of the state, and thus the principle of separation of church and state was formed.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Thank you. So, why is the DMV separate from the court system?
Is this like a practical? Is this like a joke? I don't know. Is
No,
it
no,
like a
no,
side
no,
character?
no. No, I just don't understand it. 'Cause like, I got stopped for reckless driving, or they thought I had they stopped me and ticketed me for a DWI because I refused the breathalyzer test, but then I won the case with the court system. But yet I still have to, I still, my license still got revoked, and I still have to pay a shit ton of fines for the DMV. But if I'm not convicted, why? I don't understand that.
What are the nature of the fines?
Basically, there was a civil penalty for refusing a breathalyzer test, even though you were sober. If you re refuse it, you get that civil penalty. And then there was a driver responsibility assessment, 250 for 3 years, so that was 750. And then free application fee for my license that was revoked, and it shouldn't have been because I was innocent. But so that was $100, and then I think there was another. So all in total, I paid $1,450, but
Holy fuck, dude.
I didn't do the crime that they think I did. All I did
Yeah,
was,
okay.
so that was a little annoying.
All right, so it sounds like you were basically man, okay. I feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves here because we're talking about this stuff on the podcast, but the audience doesn't really they're not really privy to the prerequisite information here. And how, like, you said you refuse a breathalyzer, and I just glossed right past that, right? But maybe that statement deserves a little bit more unpacking than it got, but it's there. So maybe can we wait for another episode until we do that? Because I think that deserves like a whole episode.
We'll talk about that another time.
You refused a breathalyzer.
I did.
But being a guy who knows really like nothing about the law, I'm just gonna put a little disclaimer here and say like I'm guessing, right? I'm gonna guess that given that there's a difference between civil penalties and criminal penalties in civil court and criminal court, you were exonerated in criminal court, but the civil penalties still went through, and thus you still had to pay like civil fines. Is that right? Because it's true that you did refuse a breathalyzer, and it's true that your license was temporarily revoked. And there are fines associated with those things. So if I was to guess, like that's why there's all this bullshit that's still being leveled at you, despite you being proven innocent.
Right, yeah. I guess that makes perfect sense, because I don't know, but I don't know what the civil, what's the civil court? Like, what's that?
Well, there's a difference between civil court and criminal court. And in the same way that there's a difference between civil crimes and like criminal crimes, I guess.
Okay.
Fuck, man. Man, I'm not a lawyer. God damn it. Like, you're making, I'm gonna sound stupid trying to talk about this stuff, but like there's civil law and criminal law, right? And there's civil law infractions and criminal law infractions. So like I think that's the way it goes,
Okay, maybe I
right?
just have to look into that more. I mean, I still don't know what civil, why I thought if I don't get, like, I hear that saying so much, don't do the crime if you can't do the time, but I didn't do the crime, so I shouldn't have to pay the fine. I'm not trying to
Well,
wrap your.
you did do a crime in that you refused a breathalyzer. I guess refusing a breathalyzer is a crime, or is a civil it's a civil crime.
Huh. Okay.
Is a civil crime a crime, or is it just a fuck? Like what?
No problem. Yeah, I just wanted to get that rant off. I feel like they shouldn't be separated, but if they are for a good reason, then I'll look into that reason. But the good news is, with all the DMV beef is behind me, I'm gonna get my license reinstated in just 2 weeks, so I'm excited about that.
Nice. Dude, that's
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. I'm gonna come pick you up and we'll go buy some crack together and like have a
Dude,
party.
that'd be super cool. I'm
Yeah.
so glad.
Yeah.
Supreme Court rules that it can be a fine, that Supreme Court rules that it can be a crime to refuse a breathalyzer. Police can charge drivers who refuse a breathalyzer with a crime. Fuck, man, I didn't know that.
So don't
You must have
refuse.
a search warrant. Yeah, don't refuse it. Let's fucking do it.
Yeah, might as well. If you're drunk, and you. Yeah, I don't want to give you guys tips on how
This is
to avoid.
actually fairly, this is fairly recent, actually. This
Huh.
was a Supreme Court case from 2016. It's fairly recent.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was I mean, I have to definitely look into it more. I was just annoyed that the fines had came out, even though I didn't. I mean, I thought it would have made sense to fine me if I was convicted, but I guess they have their own reasons for civil court. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. But I just remembered I'm gonna be able to get my license soon, so I'm gonna maybe plan a trip soon. So tell me,
Yeah.
what's going on with you lately? How are all your friends doing?
I don't have any friends. I'm reading right here, refute, and I'm reading like New York law. New York VEH and TRAF L section 1194 states, no person who operates a motor vehicle in this state may refuse to submit to a chemical test of one or more of the following: breath, blood, urine, or saliva for the purpose of determining the alcoholic and or drug content of the blood when a court order for such chemical test has been issued. And then in a subsection it says Refusing a breathalyzer after the officer has complied with all the legal requirements is a civil offense punishable by fines and license revocation. So that perfectly tracks with what you're saying. So it just that it was an automatic judgment, it sounds like, because you can't even argue that you didn't refuse the breathalyzer.
So yeah, just refusing a breathalyzer can get you fined and all that.
Yeah, it's a civil offense.
So okay, let's see. What's a civil offense? I mean, what's the difference between civil and criminal?
I think there are different types of law. There's criminal law and civil law.
So okay.
There's criminal offenses and civil offenses.
Okay. I got to look into that. I didn't know. I thought it was just all criminal. Nope. Got to get more.
Yeah, I think the major difference is you can't serve jail time for civil law violations.
Hmm. Wow.
It's really interesting stuff. Like the more heavy infractions that like make it so like you kind of need to be isolated from it, from society. Like, yeah, you can be jailed for that, but like it's a crime to like do something dangerous, right? But it's also a crime like not to pay your bill, not like it's a crime not to pay your cable bill ever. Right, or not to pay a rent.
So, okay. That could be.
And the reason I know this is because one of my family members is a lawyer, or not a lawyer. He's not a lawyer. I'm sorry. One of my family members is a lawyer, but this is the reason I know this. The reason I know this is because one of my family members is a landlord, and being a landlord, he deals with crazy ass tenants. And one time, a tenant called the cops on him. And when the cops showed up, he just said, guys, this is all civil matter. You can't really do anything here. This is going to go to trial. And the police just kind of shrugged their shoulders because he was right. Right? So matters of eviction and non-payment, those are all civil matters, and you know, like, yeah, I don't really know how it breaks down and whether or not you can be like arrested for stuff like that. I don't think you can be arrested for not paying your. Fuck. Okay, I'm not gonna say anything like that. I'm not gonna say it's not. It's still illegal for certain. Okay, this is a subject that I know nothing about. I hope that you like kind of edit out me stumbling awkwardly over what you can and cannot be arrested for.
Yeah, no worries.
So that was all embarrassing. Yeah, but anyway.
But that was educational as well. I mean, if the it's not really the DMV that's separate from the court system. It's the criminal court system is another. The DMV is connected to a civil court, so that would make more sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep.
Cool. Well, thank you for that.
I think that's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's see. Yeah. So how is your day going? Have you been? You said you don't have any friends. Is that because you're cutting out your some toxic friends?
I have cut out one toxic friend, but that was an exaggeration. I have plenty of friends, but I have plenty of friends.
That's good.
It seems like I have no friends right now because I work night shift.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
So all my friends are asleep when I'm awake. So.
Tell me about when you think is the best time to cut out a friend or a friend that the person that. Yeah. When's the best time and why? Why it's necessary.
Yeah, I don't know. Whether or not, like, first of all, it's really, really hard to identify. I mean, it's easier for some people than others. It's hard to identify whether or not a person is toxic. And it's sort of a ambiguous label, toxic friend, right? Because you have friends, and you have friends that you're currently in an argument with, and it's ambiguous about like whether or not who is right and who's in the wrong and all that stuff. And that takes an enormous amount of self-examination, and sometimes self-examination, and sometimes like you need to think on stuff. But how do you identify when someone's toxic? I think for me, it's like a system of patterns, you know, a pattern of behavior. Like for instance, I mean, you know that I'm not a malicious person, and that generally, I want the best for people generally.
Absolutely.
And I definitely want the best for my friends, right? But there are times when there's like I'll say something and it's misinterpreted, and that's sometimes on me. Sure, like I don't always communicate perfectly, but I think there is a certain friend who regularly misinterprets what I'm saying as malicious when it's not malicious. And then immediately escalates as if I've said something malicious when I've just maybe my tone was off. And, you know, just constantly having to explain that, like, what I'm saying isn't malicious when the temperature is turned up to like 120. And like, then the conversation is no longer rational. Like, you know, I like having like calm, rational conversations with people. And sometimes when you know, that's not like a good foundation for friendship. So that was something that recently happened. So I mean, I think knowing when to cut off toxic friends, it comes down to identifying patterns of toxic behavior. And making sure that those patterns are specific to a certain individual. And it's not just you who's causing the toxicity, you know. Sometimes, yeah. So that's all I have to say. Sometimes, like, there are people who are like, oh man, I just fucking hate drama, but then they seem to find drama wherever they go. And you and I have both met these. Everybody has met a person like this who constantly complains about not liking drama, but then somehow causes drama all over the place. It's important to realize, it's important to ensure that you are not the person who is, in fact, the toxic one. Being a person's hard. Being a person around other people who are different than you is hard, even if you seem to have the same goals as them and have years of shared experience with them and shared common interests. And I don't know, man, people grow apart though. And a lot of my friends have like mental illness as well. And that can be difficult to deal with, especially if the person is going through a medication change. And, you know, it's hard to like write people off, but sometimes you just have to do what's it like. Ultimately, you have to look out for yourself, right? Ultimately, the highest priority of any organism is the continued existence of that organism, right? The sustainability of that organism. Right, to make sure that that organism is going to continue to exist. That should be that is the top priority of any system. That's sometimes to continue to maintain oneself, you have to cut out things that are toxic. So. That is my that those are my thoughts on the subject. How about you? What do you think? Like, what can you give me a time where like you have identified some sort of toxic behavior and you need to cut out a toxic friend?
Yeah, absolutely. It's you.
Oh man,
Yep.
that sucks. Dude, I'm
Yeah,
sorry.
because you keep calling me gay when you know I'm not gay.
Well, because you are gay.
Okay.
It's all right though. It's just weird to me that in 2021 you have to like constantly tell people you're not gay when you clearly are gay.
Okay. See, like.
Like you're bringing it up right now, like I never even said you were gay, and then now you're just saying that you're not gay, and like it's really weird. Like you need to prove something. It's like you have that you're constantly putting up this front of like needing to prove that you're not gay, even when like the subject hasn't been breached, and like it's just really weird. I think you should just live your truest self and like not care about wanting to fuck guys. You should just go fuck guys,
I
you know?
don't want to though. You do. You're the gay one, and you keep calling me gay, which is like really confusing.
I wish I was gay, you know? Like then I wouldn't be dealing with so much heartbreak. It would be so much more convenient for me if I was gay.
But well,
But unfortunately,
that's good because you are.
literally
Okay.
not, though.
Okay, fine. Let's just agree that we're both
Your
not
brother's
gay.
definitely gay, though. Like, all jokes aside, your brother's. We should have him on.
Yep, we should. He will
We should have him on, and we'll discuss the little
well,
text exchange we had.
I like his response even though
With
like
the audience.
his response when people call him gay, he's like, I'm not gay, but if no, he's like, if I was gay, you would be my boyfriend. So that's a good response, I
Yeah,
guess.
that's what a gay person would say. That's
Yeah.
what a gay person would say.
But
That's
yeah.
what a gay person who hasn't like fully committed to being gay would say. Because like, I mean, I understand, right? Like you guys are born in a country where there's like rampant religious fundamentalism and like it's still sort of taboo to be gay, even like in America where it's like widely accepted. But I mean, to me, as somebody who cares about you, it's just very sad to see you not like, because you're not happy when you're closeted, right? You're not
You would
being your
know.
true
You
self.
would know.
I would know because I have many gay friends who, you know, they've come out of the closet and like they're way happier. So, you know, I hope one day, buddy, that you'll grow a fucking backbone and realize you're gay.
Okay. I will address that in another podcast.
Just don't be a fucking pussy about it. Jesus
Jesus,
Christ, dude. Come on.
Jesus. So yes, okay. Back to toxic friends. The way I identify toxic friends is not like this. You're my best friend, so of course I'm not gonna cut you
Yeah,
off.
you're my best friend.
I'm as a growing up, I guess I became a good judge of character by trying to be a good friend to people that really didn't really have good social skills, or they weren't they were kind of knuckleheads. And I mean, everybody grows up and we all make mistakes, but the book I read was of Mice and Men a long time ago. So playing the part of George, and there's a lot of Lennies for me, made me realize who am I willing to play George for when necessary, I guess.
How many friends have you like taken out to the lake and shot in the back of the
No,
head because
I did not.
they killed some poor woman?
I completely forgot that's the ending. Wow.
That's how that story ends, dude. I don't know if you
Well,
want to stick with that analogy.
I guess no. I guess in a way, I didn't do that, but I did just say farewell to a lot of Lennies in my life.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was one that you.
You're also kind of calling your friends retarded.
I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to. It's
Like,
just an analogy. It's just an analogy, okay? It's like.
this is a really weird analogy where like your friends are retarded. Your friends are like violent, dangerous, retarded people who you're eventually going to have to put down.
We agree that Lenny was toxic, right? He was a kind of
He
toxic
was
guy.
sort of toxic,
Okay,
yeah. He
so
was
that.
constantly killing animals and then
Yeah.
made it really hard for George to hold down a job. Yeah, but he could haul some fucking hay, dude.
Yep. But if that's his only qualification for being a friend, I mean, so yeah, The one here's one that I remember a while back when we both used to work at Sutherland, and I introduced you to one a friend who was also my supervisor at the time. The way I identified he's toxic is by him gossiping about his friends. When I just entered the job, he would gossip about everybody that's been there with him for 2 years to a stranger.
Yeah, dude, you can tell a lot about a person's character by like how they talk about other people.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
you can
100%.
tell a lot about a person by how they talk about people when they're not around.
Yeah. And
And
it
you know me, like I try to chat people up when they're not around. Like for you, I'm like, you know, my best friend is really gay and I love him for it.
Thank you.
You
Thank you
know,
very
my
much.
best friend is he's an immigrant and he's super gay, and like my personal experience, like gay people are pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, so
Yeah,
that's what I say
absolutely.
about you when you're not around. So
It's funny because I say my best gay friend is delusional that I'm gay, but
oh
I
yeah?
think it's
Who
endearing. So,
you have a best gay friend?
yeah. I mean, it's you, but
Oh, that's
it's
cool.
endearing that you think I'm gay too. But I mean, like,
That's
we all
amazing. That
want
makes
people to
sense.
be like us, so it's all right.
Yeah, that makes sense for you because you're fucking gay. You're saying like we all want people to be like us, so my friend is gay. Right? Is that what you said?
Essentially,
We can play, I mean the audience can play back the tape, they can just rewind and that
yeah,
is what you said.
I mean
So logically you're saying I want friends who are like me, so I seek out gay friends.
I never th those weren't my words, but okay. I'll let you believe what you want, and yeah, the way people talk about other people when they're not around, definitely. Depicts what kind of person they are. But the funniest part was when I think people like you, it's difficult, you're right, it's difficult to identify when people are toxic or just in a way psychotic when you're becoming friends with them. For instance, when that same friend I slept over his house, he has a fiance and everything. The next morning, I had you speak on the phone with him just to see your reading of him. Do you remember that conversation?
I remember, yeah, because I was driving Lyft at the moment, and then like, I
What was
think I
your.
got reported later. I got reported later on for being on a phone call.
Damn.
Yeah, it's okay.
Damn. What was your
Yeah,
impression at that
I
time?
never told you that actually.
No.
My impression was that he was like, I don't know, man. It was such a meaningless interaction,
I mean, yeah, you
and I
talked
was.
about video games, you talked about Dota, you talked about this, that, and the third, right? But
Yeah, all kind of like superficial stuff.
yeah, and you said that he seems like a cool guy. He seems well put together, but
Yeah,
the
that's like the neutral, that's my neutral position. You know? That's yeah.
But then
He seems cool.
I told you about the how he threatened to slit my throat
Yeah,
the
that's one thing that's like
night
makes you kind of uncool.
before. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you kind of lose points for that one.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I should not have came here to drink and have a good time. And that friend was cut off, per se.
Yeah.
So,
It
but
sounds
then,
like he was trying to cut you off. Cut your
well
head
done.
off, maybe.
Well done.
Yeah, was it well done? Yeah, it was kind of awkward. I don't know. I
No.
don't know if I deserve credit for that one,
No, you
maybe.
got it. You got it. See, those are the easily identified friends that are toxic. But then when we build a bond with
Sure.
some friends, and it's a long sustaining bond, and then they aren't really like they don't like you said that this friend would see a perceived attack when you're not trying to insult or anything.
Yeah, and like one instance of that I can kind of chalk up to like, fuck, man, maybe I should work on my communication skills. But like, it would happen like multiple times every time we would hang out. And I would like, at first, I would start tailor, like trying to tailor my behavior. And like, man, maybe that last thing I said, that was out of line. And like, that like really affected him. And like, man, that was fucked up what I said. But then like, I would say like some stuff that was like really ambiguous, not even ambiguous, but like, I don't know. I don't want to like bring up examples because I don't want to reveal details
Best
about
friend.
people outside of the podcast.
That's respectable.
But yeah, whenever something becomes a pattern, it becomes way more obvious, you know. And it tends to, like, sometimes my communication is like not great. Sometimes. But like, I don't know, with when it becomes like a repeat thing with like one specific person, then, you know, it might just be that person.
Did you feel like that person constantly depicted you as the opposition or something? Yeah, that doesn't feel that great when it comes from a friend.
No, it doesn't. And it almost felt like, and this is a big stretch, right? Like, it almost felt like they perceived me with malicious intent and were projecting their own malicious intent of me onto me. You
Whoa.
know? Like, that's kind of how it felt at the end. At like at the very end. And I was just like, fuck this, dude. Because, I mean, he was sending me some stuff. Like, our last interaction, one of our last interactions was, our last in-person interaction was, I went over to his house and we smoked some cigarettes. We smoked some tobacco and, we got a little, there was some like special tobacco. Okay. And, you know, so it was like good vibes and we were chilling. And then his mom comes in and he yells at his mom a lot, like, and I don't mean like, I mean like he was calling her the C word and stuff, you know.
Not cool,
He was
not
calling her
cool.
the, yeah, pretty not cool, like when a guest is over, I guess. He was like getting in her face and I don't know, it was sort of awkward for me. You know, I don't want to make it all about me, but like whenever there's like conflict that is extremely like he was verbally abusing his mom, right? Like right.
Mad awkward, dude. It's so awkward. It's
It
like,
was extremely awkward, and then he was having like a psychotic episode, and I was just I try and he's not a small dude either. This dude's ex-military, so. You know, he's tall and he's a little bit intimidating. And this wasn't like the first time he was like this either. There have been instances like this in the past. And like the way I handled the situation is he kept saying that he was gonna commit suicide and he was yelling at his mom that he was gonna commit suicide. And I kept telling him to sit down, like, let's just sit down. We can sit down together and talk. And do you want a hug? I can just give you a hug. Let's go outside. And we went outside and never did give him a hug. But I kept asking him if he wanted a hug.
you're a good
And
friend.
we went
You're a good
outside.
friend.
I try, dude, I try really hard to be a good friend. And I try to be a good friend and so that all went down, and we sat out on his porch for a pretty long time, and he was telling me how like his life was over. I'm like, dude, your life's not over. You're still a young man. You're a young man with your whole life ahead of you, and you have a car, and you know how to drive, and you have good connections. You have two parents that love the shit out of you, and you're in this big ass house, and you know you're smart, and you're creative, and you know, like you have all these options. You have all these options. And I think I did talk him down. And then his dad came back from work and like my dad and him, like not my dad, but his dad and he, we all talked together. And then he was starting to yell at his dad a little bit. And that was a little bit awkward. So, but it cooled off near the end. Basically, his dad gave me a ride home. Which was nice, because he like the friend was the one who gave me a ride there, and I was like, okay, it's probably not in a good state of mind. I don't really feel safe with him driving me home. So his dad gave me a ride home, and his dad and I like had a good chat. Like his dad likes me, I think, because, like, you know, he could see that I'm trying to be a good friend. And, you know, that was our last in-person interaction. Me just trying to be a good friend and help him through this fucking awful time that he was going through in his mind. And just trying to be a good friend. And then he messages me saying, I'm working to make an NFT, which is some sort of like derivative asset built on blockchain technology. And I said, cool, man, I hope you make $1 million. And this was all over Discord chat. And he interpreted that as snark and said I was resentful.
What?
Yeah. And like, dude, like after me like trying to be such a good friend to you after like an awkward moment, you're just out of line. And like, you know, I said the way you talk to people is totally fucking unacceptable. And the way you talk to your mom is fucking disgusting. And I don't know how many fucking friends you need to lose before you realize that you're an asshole, but you're a fucking ungrateful little asshole.
You gave him your
And
all. There we go.
I mean, that wasn't even close to my all.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not even close. Fuck, man. Like,
You gave
you
him.
know, I gave him a piece of my fucking mind.
Yep, that's what I was gonna say.
I gave him a fucking piece for
Yeah.
sure. But I don't know. And then he kind of just said, like, well, you've been a source of toxicity in my life for a while. I'm like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking
That
about.
was a plot twist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You don't know. You just don't know what the fuck you're talking about, dude. So,
Jesus.
yeah, we don't talk anymore. That's the end of the story.
We don't
So
talk
yeah,
anymore.
that you gotta cut toxic people out of your life.
Yeah, absolutely, bro.
And just spend your time with people who appreciate you.
Point blank.
Right? That's it.
Point
If
blank,
you
yep.
get the feeling that someone does not appreciate you and does not care about you got like it's over. And I don't care who that is. I don't care if that's like a lover or a parent or like a close family member. You know, if it's a brother or a sister, if you get the feeling they don't fucking care about you for whatever reason, and if that reason manifests itself consistently, yeah, you gotta fucking take a break for your own well-being. So that's what I did. That's the impression I got. That's what I did.
Nice. Yeah, as you should. I mean, you did your best. What else? I know your friend had is dealing with mental illness, but so are we. I mean, so is everybody. I mean, in a way, they're not everybody's
Yeah,
dealing with the same. Yeah.
not everybody's dealing with the same mental illness, right?
Yeah.
And not everybody is dealing with schizophrenia, which is
Right.
what he was dealing
Right.
And schizophrenia, you know, I have clinical depression and I have kidney disease and you have bipolar disorder,
Yeah.
but he has schizophrenia. And you and I have the privilege of being able to find a medication and being able to take that medication. Basically forever, right? I don't know, like
Yes, absolutely.
you can keep taking lithium until like the day you die, and it'll keep being an effective treatment for bipolar disorder, right?
Yeah.
And I can keep taking Zoloft as an effective treatment for manic depression.
Right.
Schizophrenia isn't like that though. Schizophrenia, you can take a medication and you can be on that medication for a while, but ultimately your body's going to adapt to that medication. So inevitably you're going to go through situations where you're between medications, where you're currently on a medication that's wearing off and that medication no longer works. Now you have to go through the healthcare system, which is absolutely flawless in this country. It has no possible failures. It works 100% well, 100% of the time. And there's never, ever any trouble when it comes to like getting the right medication and seeing doctors and getting that medication at an affordable price. That's all really easy, obviously. But obviously, like, there's going to be these periods in your life where you're between zones, and that's when it's really hard. So, whether or not I'm like completely writing this person off, that's the hard decision. That's like the truly hard decision to make, like whether or not this, like how much of this, how much of these interactions are like a symptom of an aspect of a person's weakness, a person's mental disorder.
Oh
But
yeah.
yeah, I don't.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So whether or not I would still be friends with this person after they got properly medicated, I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, he's having a tough time dealing with his mental illness, but one thing you have to
Yeah,
realize is
it's hard for him to keep friends for sure.
yes, but also one thing I realize myself is like I had my name is Masi, which means Messiah. I think it I actually fed into that, and I developed a Messiah complex or something because I would try to save everybody, and it's eventually it really fucked me up. I got stabbed by a friend. I got in trouble. Almost got arrested with some friends because I wanted to help them. And you said it first earlier on. You do have to look after numero uno in life forever. And in a way,
Yeah.
sometimes you have to make sacrifices to do that. And it's not your job to take care of every single person or every single one of your dear friends. And sometimes it backfires even if you do so. So the best thing to do is
Yeah.
just chalk it up to just remember the good memories and then just move on. You don't necessarily have to leave the door open and have them come back in and cause all this mess. And I mean, you can, it's completely up to you. But for me, some friendships that failed, it's best that they stay the way, I mean, it's best that they don't enter my life again
Yeah.
because I put too much work into it and I did
Yeah.
all the things I was supposed to. And I feel like you, bro. I was literally accused of being the opposition when I'm giving my feedback on something, and I'm like, I'm just trying to
Yeah.
be a friend. So I feel like you, man. My thing.
Yeah. You know, I think it's fair to say that we are, you and I, we're both damaged people, and we know the following than anybody. The people that need love the most are oftentimes the hardest people to love. Right? And knowing that and understanding that and building relationships based on that understanding can sometimes lead you to having, you know, weird interactions with people, to say the least, to put it lightly. So, yeah.
Agreed, 100%. Agreed. So with that said, those are our thoughts of when and why to cut out toxic friends or people in general. Let's get to. I just wanted to ask you what are you working on? Any creative projects you would like the audience to know of?
Trying to promote the podcast right now. Trying to
Okay.
promote, you know what?
Promoting the podcast. Okay.
Yeah. So like I just started a new job, right? And I talk to people at my job, and I'll ask like, what do you like to do outside of work? And you know, they give me an answer, and then you know, they ask the same question that I ask them. You know how a conversation works. You know how that goes.
Absolutely.
So they ask me, well, what do you like to do? And I always respond with the same stuff, right? I always say like basically the same four things. I have a podcast with my friend. I like to play piano. I'm currently designing a card game. I like to read. Those are the four things I usually say,
Solid.
and absolutely 0% of the time do people ask me, like 100% of the time people are like, oh, you play piano? That's cool. Absolutely 0% of the time does anybody say, "Oh, you're developing a card game? That's cool." Nobody ever says that. And nobody ever asks about the podcast. So, as far as like marketing goes, as far as marketing goes, it's sort of dead in the water. But yeah, I mean, I have creative projects in the works. I'm glad you asked about creative projects, just blank outside of that. But there's two major ones, I guess. I'm trying to write a screenplay for this book that wasn't designed to be adapted into a movie. It's called Infinite Jest, and merely by me saying these words, the fact that I've read Infinite Jest now, that makes me undateable. So
What?
yeah, there's a little inside joke among book people that like don't ever date a man with Infinite Jest on his bookshelf.
Why?
So yeah, just
It's an extremely complex book,
why?
right?
Yeah, it's a very hard book. It's notoriously a difficult book, but it's like one of those books that's like very pseudo intellectual, and it's oftentimes it's like, oh, this person will only ever talk about this book, and that's all the only book they've ever read. That's the general stereotype. Yeah. But as a guy who likes to, I do like to read, but I'm not like obsessed with Infinite Jest or anything, but
Yeah, nope.
I think it would be like an interesting book to be adapted into a movie. So I'm, in the process of rereading it and writing a screenplay for it. So that's like one creative project. I'm rediscovering my love for piano after a long hiatus. It's sort of like, I think anytime you play a musical instrument, it's almost like a romantic relationship. And that sometimes people get weirded out when I say that. It's like, are you fucking your piano? Like, oh, asshole. Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm not fucking my piano. I do, not fuck my piano. But like a romantic relationship or an intimate maybe I shouldn't say romantic. Maybe I should just say intimate. An intimate relationship is more than just like putting your organs in another person's organs. It's, it's touching them and like talking to them and like communicating with them and developing this like unique system of communication with this other person that you only share with that person. And like when you get into music and you start playing music and you really, really get into that like zen, like meditative state while you're playing music, and that's a state that you can only reach while playing music, it does feel like a sense of intimacy that you share with this external thing. And that was absent from my life for a really long time because I left my piano in Rochester and I traveled around the country for a little bit. And now I bought a piano again and now I have a piano and I'm relearning how to do everything. It's sort of like, so I built up this analogy, like, and then the way I'm comparing it, it's like imagine if you were to get back with your ex, right? Imagine if you were to like get back with the person you love. There would be this like level of uncertainty around like kissing them for the first time again and like touching them for the first time again or having sex with them for the first time again. All these areas would be uncertain because like you're a different person now and they're a different person now. And there's all this learning that needs to be done and like you might be rusty. So it's a lot like that. But it's like that in the sense of like let's say you loved someone for 5 years, for like, let's say you were in a 6-year relationship and then you spent 10 years alone and then you meet that person in passing and that spark is still there. but there's still all this, like, there's this uncertainty because you're both different people. So that's like what it's like with me and my piano.
Wow.
And yeah, that's all really heavy, and I don't know
It's
how that's
heavy.
coming off, but
Yeah.
yeah, it's heavy. And you
Yeah.
know what? It is heavy.
So you're so it's like yeah, I mean it's well described that you, so you have a lot of history and you just don't know where to go from there.
There's like a, first of all, it's not the same piano, by the way. It's not like, but it is just a piano. Right. But fuck, how did, this is really, it all makes sense in my brain,
It's
though.
okay. I understand. I get what you
But
mean.
I know this is fucking weird. It's
No,
like
no. You have
weird
a lot
to
of
me in my head.
you have a lot of passion for music and your piano, and like
Yeah.
and being a gay guy, it all comes out really well because like you have a lot of
Yeah, of
emotion. You
course.
have a lot of
Yeah.
emotion that you have to place somewhere, and if it's not a guy's
Yeah.
butthole, it has to
I
be.
gotta put my hands on something, and if it's
Yeah.
not up a man's ass, it's gotta be like on the black and white keys, baby. Yeah, I just want to make clear I'm not fucking my piano.
That's good to
Definitely not
know.
fucking my
That's
piano.
good to know.
The closest I get is I have a queen size bed, and sometimes, like when I'm about to go to sleep, I'll bring the piano up into the bed with me, and I'll play the piano, and then like, yeah, the piano's just in the bed, and then I'll go to sleep next to the piano. But it's not at no point is my penis ever in contact with the piano.
You're
Yeah,
overselling it. You're overselling that part.
no,
Now,
I just
people.
want to make clear. I just want to
Okay.
make very clear that no piano fucking is going on. My penis is not a 3.5 millimeter jack.
Good.
Watch.
Good. So this is part of your creative projects is creating music and creating little piano babies with your piano.
Never creating little piano babies. Didn't say anything close to that. I do not know. Nope. Not. I'm just. You know what?
Okay,
I'm
okay.
rejecting 100% of your statement. I'm rejecting the whole premise of your statement. And
Was
yeah.
saying, but it is part of your creative project. You're trying to create music, you're doing the podcast,
Yeah, but I guess
and
there's
what
like
else?
three. I guess four main things. I guess I'm writing a screenplay for Infinite Jest, but there's like extra components to it. Fuck, man. Like, I could go into like a whole episode of like why, like what my process is for Infinite Jest, because Infinite Jest was like a book that was very much designed to only be a book, and it doesn't really work as it's designed not to work anywhere else, because it's the way, like, let me just describe the book real quick. So there's three main plots. There's three main plot lines. The first plot line is there is a main character who is a he's a member of the staff at a halfway house filled with recovering drug addicts. Right, so one of the major themes of the book is addiction, and then the second main character in the second plot line is he's a young tennis prodigy at a boarding school. So like the second, I guess the second plot line is like largely about addiction slash the striving for success and fame. Like largely, like the book itself is about addiction, right? And that character's father creates a film that is so entertaining that once you watch it, you don't want to do anything else. It is infinitely entertaining, such that when you watch it, you don't want to do anything else. And you will watch it until you inevitably starve to death. and die. And the third plot line of the book is these two spies, one is working for America and one is working for Canada, and they're trying to find the master copy of this film, the film being Infinite Jest. So how to capture that on film, like how to capture a movie that is so entertaining that it entrances anybody who watches it such that they watch it infinitely, is difficult. It's extremely difficult. And the book itself discusses infinity in a variety of ways. And the book itself is notoriously long. So I would think that the movie itself would also be notoriously long. So the way I want to design it is I'm going to write out, like I'm going to, like I'm the screenwriter essentially, and I'm going to open source the script such that each scene can be done by a freelance animator, any freelance animator, can create and upload a scene, and the movie itself will be 24 hours long. Like all the scenes collected together will be 24 hours long. So the movie itself, if you were to sit down and watch the movie, it would take you 24 hours. So what I'm going to do, because the screenplay is open source, I'm going to upload segments of the film, like upload the scenes in chronological order first, throughout the day, right? So where like the same scene is playing at 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. The same scene is playing. The same scene will always play at the same point in the day. But whether or not the scene is playing in chronological order or the book or the way it's presented in the text of the book, which is non-chronological, it flips back and forth through time, that will be random. So you as the audience member don't know whether or not you are watching the chronological version or the non-chronological version, and the only way to find out is to keep watching.
Wow, very good. Very good.
So, yeah, there's a couple other ideas that are folded in there that I haven't really developed yet that I don't really want to talk about right now. But hopefully, as I develop it further, this is just a piece of writing, so hopefully I won't get into, like, I won't run into, like, any major creative walls. But, yeah, I would like to, like, I would like this to be a project that's completely open source and open for people to contribute to. And in another way, it being open source and open for, like, individual freelance animators to contribute to, you can have different animators, like different versions of the same scene, right? And you can flip those in and out as well. And because the same or like the same scene order will be played at the same time of every day, you know what scene you're watching despite it looking different. You know what? That's contradictory to what I said earlier, but yeah, that part still needs to be worked out, whether or not to present it chronologically or in book order. That might be something I take creative license with, because I think like having the movie itself be non-chronological, I don't know if I want to keep that, because I don't know, like it might be needlessly confusing. But
that is really interesting. Like,
yeah, it's
like to design something, a movie like that. The premise is really interesting, to design a movie, or it's a movie, right? The father designed a movie or directed a movie.
Well, he directed the movie.
Okay.
That is infinitely
entertaining.
Entertaining.
Yeah. Wow.
And entertainment is largely like it's thematically consistent with addiction, and that's it's it's played side by side, and it's interwoven with the concept of addiction. Like addiction and entertainment are like interwoven together conceptually within the novel. So, yeah, that's what I want to do.
Wow. Yeah, that's very.
I think chronologically would be better. You know, I think chronologically would be slightly better because I don't expect anybody to sit down and watch the movie all the way through. So inevitably, the way the audience is going to be consuming it is going to be non-chronological. So you could probably get away with just doing it chronologically, even though the book itself isn't presented chronologically. So
Okay.
yeah, I think I will present it chronologically. Or I won't. I don't know. Who knows? Many things may change between now and when I release the final script.
Okay. That's very
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah. Also, but yeah, also like the end product will be a website with that automatically plays a collection of scenes, which is the movie. But the collection of scenes is like always changing and always shifting. It's largely because I want it to also kind of be collaborative in a way. But yeah, like this is a developing idea. Maybe I'll talk about it more in future episodes. But yeah,
Absolutely,
that is.
absolutely. Is
How about you?
that?
What are you working on creatively?
I'll get to that in just a sec, because I think it's best you speak at this moment, because there's a mowing, somebody's mowing a lawn. But tell me another book that you were reading. It was Nietzsche's book or something that was really complex as well.
Fuck Nietzsche, first of all. I don't really know Nietzsche. It's not Nietzsche. Is there another book that was like really complex that was there?
Yeah. Pretty sure it was Nietzsche. You were trying to read something about Nietzsche, or was it? It was another complex book.
I was trying to reread Carl Jung's The Undiscovered Self, which is sort of complicated. I don't think it was Carl Jung that I was talking about. Was I talking about Fantasyland, maybe? That's the book I'm currently reading.
Yeah, I heard it was, but a while back, it couldn't have been Infinite Jest, because I think you started talking about Infinite Jest not too long ago. But there was another book that was really complicated. Damn.
Gravity's Rainbow?
No, I don't. You sure it
Speaking of
wasn't?
books, we like start and fucking give up on.
What was it? The one that you gave up on was Gravity?
Yeah, fuck Gravity's Rainbow. Yeah, no,
Okay.
I'm not gonna finish it.
Yeah, no worries, no worries.
I'm convinced that nobody has read slash on like I'm convinced that nobody has under has read that book all the way through. Or people who have read it, like they don't understand it. I don't think anybody understands that book. I think it's like Ulysses, you know. It's like, I don't know. Maybe it does have a point. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't.
Hard books are really hit or miss. It's like either they're like hard on purpose and therefore bullshit, or they're hard and like it's actually worth the effort.
You read the New Testament, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that's a fun one.
Why did you read
Yeah,
that? Just out of curiosity.
I just wanted to see what like the hype was about. Like
Okay.
all these people that like, you know, it's probably the most influential book out there. You know, think of how many fucking people are Christian. Think of like all the years of Christianity that like sprung up from that book itself. And there's so many different translations and interpretations of the New Testament. So I wanted to kind of see what the hype was about. And after reading the New Testament, I'm convinced that like most religious people haven't read it. I think this is something that I've said before, but I'll say it again. I think in a common theme in adult political conversations is I think many times people will reference words that they don't know the definition of, or books that they've never read, whether that be the New Testament, the Constitution, or 1984. That's like the new favorite. That's the new favorite book to reference that you haven't actually read. Yeah, but I don't think many people have read the New Testament. Like, because many people think it's like a book of, it's a nonfiction. People think, people take it as like a historical document, and it's like, how could it be? There are people who live for like 600 years. Like, how, and how, like, people also take it as like a moral document as well, but there's like, there's fucking rape going on, there's like slavery and shit, and like, in the, like, how, I guess, like, my question for somebody who views the New Testament as a good and moral book, like, how, like, what's your reading of Lot's daughters getting Lot drunk and then basically raping him and getting pregnant with the, like, why are they having sex with their own father after getting him so drunk that he falls unconscious after leaving Sodom? Why, what does that mean? Like, what did God, like, if you presume that, like, the people who wrote that were channeling God, what was God trying to convey with that piece of text? You know, like, it just seems like it was written by crazy people, and it was clearly a work of fiction, you know? Like, right. The stories are fantastical. There's, like, fucking speaking animals, you know? It's a fucking fiction book, dude. And it's fine. It's, like, really, really beautiful in parts. It's extremely beautiful in certain moments, and I wouldn't ever discount it. But, like, I think more people should read it. I would recommend it, you know? I would recommend it over Infinite Jest, actually. I think Infinite Jest is, like, sort of, you know, masturbatory in its own way. And probably not worth reading. I mean, with the advent of audiobooks, everything is so easy to consume now. You know, you can so easily consume these texts. You don't actually have to, like, sit down for hours upon hours. You can sit and wash the dishes and do self-care and, like, consume these works that, like, generations and upon generations before you, like, maybe didn't even have access to, like, the proper translation in their native tongue. You know, think of, like, how many years it took before Germans were actually able to, like, read their own Bible. Like, people had to, like, translate it for them. And, like, it seemed like most of them were being manipulated. That's what Martin Luther had, like, such a big problem with. So, yeah. Religion is, like, it's a tough animal. And religious texts are, like, really profound in their own way. And that's why, like, that's why these things are still around. But I think just more people should just stop being so full of shit. Like, actually just read the shit, you know? And that's, like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no. Sorry, I'm
angry.
No, no worries. That's a good approach to understanding what you're following. Cause, like, I a lot of my childhood growing up, I was confused and I was an atheist, and I'm still, I'm agnostic, I guess, now, but growing up and trying to understand religion from people's point of view was really confusing in it of itself, because I asked questions and then inevitably we would get to a point where the person would be like, you just have to have faith.
Yeah, fuck that.
What?
Nah.
I'm trying to understand, though. Like, can I understand before?
You just want me to believe? You just want me to believe?
Yeah, like, just believe. Yeah,
just do these things without ever asking questions. You don't, like,
yep.
Yeah, yep. Dude, I just don't buy into that.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Buy into that. It seems like what somebody who's trying to manipulate me would say.
Right, right. Trust me. Yeah, trust me before you know me. That's kind of like, what?
Trust me before you know me. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't really add up.
Yeah, I think people should just read the stuff. You know.
For sure.
Like, withhold your opinion. Like, I'm generally against having strong opinions about subjects that you don't, like, that you don't know anything about. You know, when people ask me like, are you are you Islam? Like, are not nah, for fuck's sake, you got to edit that shit out because, like, that's absolutely a retarded sentence. Are you Islam?
No
Don't ever fucking let anybody hear that I said that.
Okay.
It's fine. Whatever. Are you Muslim? Right.
Yes, yes.
That's the general question.
Right.
So, like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm Muslim or not. I've never read the Quran.
Right.
You know? So just read the stuff, man. Just read it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason why a lot of, like, I could see why people are, listening to another podcast talk about conformity, and people just conform because, like, it's subconsciously conforming, just to fit in without really getting to know anything. And I mean, that's how, I believe that's how churches work. When I was
Yeah, of
going to
course.
churches, there was a lot of people, like, they kept talking about how this was a tiny little church and it grew so big and now we could afford these things. And I'm like, okay, so you brought people here and they just, like, were like, I like this church. I'm gonna do my best to contribute and make it bigger. But
Right.
it's just like, I want to be sitting in a room or in a place with the pastor and just like a barrage of questions without, like, why,
Yeah.
that's my style. But that can get a lot of
Yeah.
people angry, so.
But like probably a priest is like a good person to talk to. Because
Absolutely.
people don't like
Absolutely.
not that you're having like a crisis of faith, but like not like even an atheist should learn from this. Like if you're an atheist and you actually want to engage in good faith about what you're reading, if you actually want to do the reading and you have questions, probably go to a priest. Because a lot of people don't know this. Priests have to fucking go to school for a long time. Priests have to go to religious school. Like a priest is an official distinction. You know, you have to go to school for a long time and you have to study a long time. And like a priest has an authority about these things. And like they know. And I'm not a religious guy. And I think religion is a huge scam, and I think like these things catch on be because human beings are social animals, and we need community, and we'll get that community from anywhere. And like, there's been a number of times where I've been like fucking really horny, and I've just considered like maybe breaking down and going to church and finding a nice little church girl, but you know, I've never done it. I don't know exactly where that line of thought has gone, but.
No, I get what you mean though. It is,
But you get what I'm trying to say.
in good faith. That's where I like I thought some when I went sober, celibate, without religion, I did all of those things because, like, I wanted to mentor self-development. But in religion, there's a that's kind of really what they're trying to get people to do, self-develop in a way where we're like, but they have a lot of restrictions and they have a lot of fear mongering going on. So, like,
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak to Christianity, right? But it seems like the way that it seems like the way a lot of churches want you to develop, or a lot of religious people want you to develop, it's to serve something outside of yourself. And like, I guess I'm not into that. I'm big into like serving your own interest. You know, like you should look out for your own interest, but also like at the same time. You should like it's ultimately good to develop some sort of internal mechanism where you're like I think people generally get some sort of dopamine hit after they help other people because they're realizing their own good nature in the world. Some people don't have that. Fuck do you motivate those people? I don't know. Here's an interesting question. Like, for the people who don't get good feelings from helping other people and like feeling they're doing good by doing good for others, like if that's like some people just are missing that. They have some sort of defect psychologically where they acquire no good feelings by doing good for others. How does that person work within a religious framework? You know, are they rewarded by that system? Are they like excluded by that system? How do they operate? I don't have these answers, but I think it's like interesting to think about. I do have theories, but like I'm not gonna like talk about that right now. I think it's just an interesting question that people should think about.
Yeah, I'm not sure about those people. If people don't benefit from helping other people emotionally, spiritually, I'm not sure. But the best type of church I went to was in Rochester, New York. It was downtown Rochester. It was a church that everybody can go to, any type of religion. So all in religions were included.
Oh yeah, the non-denominational.
Exactly, the non-denominational church. It was really cool. The atmosphere is like no one was excluded. So that was pretty cool. Also, the other church I went to, just because I was checking out churches and trying to figure out religion, just trying to see what it's all about. But I got to participate in purchasing a Christmas present and wrapping it and basically donating it to a child or children, I believe, that were affected by parents that weren't around. Either one was in prison or both were just not around, which was really cool. So churches do have some beneficial, or in a way, charitable beneficial causes that shouldn't be overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, like ch churches as institutions are largely good. I mean, they're a little bit problematic when they protect pedophiles. Like that's fucked up. But yeah, but like we shouldn't like view that whole controversy of like the church protecting pedophiles and say like, okay, I'm not some sort of pedophile apologist, but I'm saying like, we shouldn't totally discount the church and all the good it has done. Like as a net, like as an institution, the Catholic Church is like a net positive, right? And I'm saying that as an atheist. Like think of all the charitable causes, you know? Like it's a net positive, and like I don't believe in like the mysticism, and I don't really believe in the supernatural, but I don't really have to like see that. It's doing good work.
Well said. Well said. I agree. With that said, I believe this episode is coming to an end.
Okay. You don't have to edit out the parts where I'm like saying dumb as fuck stuff. You know, I think we all make dumb little.
Speaking mistakes.
Yeah, really like speaking mistakes. Yeah, I made a few dumb little speaking mistakes here and there in this episode.
Yeah, no worries, bro. We're just starting off. We're bound to trip on our words here and there.
You want to plug your social media?
No, I'd rather not, thank you. Anyway, you like to end this episode?
Okay. Check Mozzie out on Twitter, biggayretard at gmail.com. You should email him your social security number and your bank details, and give him as many black dildos as humanly possible to P.O. Box 4206924 247.
And if you guys can find any or all piano porn, just send them to this email address. I'm going to post it in the description. It's going to be Jake's email address or one of his social media accounts. He will really appreciate that. He wants to pass down his genes through piano fucking.
That does get my dick rock hard, yeah.
Take care, everyone. Thank you for listening. This was Giacomo and Mazi. We are out.